You are listening to the Good Luck Spotlight Podcast, episode number 51 for April 2010.
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who work share people's mind. Beware my power, we might just lie. We capacity 46-1. We capacity 58-9. We capacity 64-5. Now I'm charged with burning bright. We capacity 75. We capacity 83-2. We capacity 99-9. Now I'm back into the fight.
Welcome to today's chapter of the Green Lantern Spotlight, the premier locale for all your Green Lantern-related news, rumors, and reviews. I'm your host, Frankie Mateo, and joining me today are Brandon West, the co-webmaster of the website, speedsterside.proboards.com, as well as Kuhan, the creator of the Real View Mirror podcast. Also, we have Colton, always present, always lovable. And we also have Eric, normally fond of all things comic book related. And we also have...
I love it!
And we also have the man who brought us here today, Andrew NDP. Andrew NDP, the creator of thegreenlanterncore.com. How are you guys doing?
He's McGoggin.
He's McGoggin. He's totally McGoggin.
You guys are McGoggin.
I saw your eyes. Eyes ripping.
We're on McGoggin.
Yeah. I told you to close your eyes during that whole thing, and you McGoggin the whole fucking time.
Why did that be a Why?
Rip Hunter was McGogging that entire movie, and I was taken right out of it.
As for the little bit of news we have, actor John Tenney has been cast as Martin Jordan for in the Green Lantern film. The actor is known mostly for his role on the TV show The Closer. Also, actress Angela Bassett has been cast in the film as Amanda Waller.
We're just getting this news today, Andrew. Yes, we just found out a moment ago.
Listen, guys, you need to know that the process of information that actually happens in between of our thorough and rigorous research into the Green Lantern films.
You can even say anal.
And our anal retentiveness as to getting actual information takes a bit of time to actually filter as to what is real and what is fake. So as of right now, we are confirming the actress Angela Bassett is actually in the Green Lantern film as Amanda Waller.
I don't know. I think Amanda Waller should have been played by Yancy Butler.
None of you know who Yancy Butler is. Yancy Butler was actually the actress who played
McGog in the TSA movie.
McGog,
yes.
Or her role is in Witchblade on the syndicated series Witchblade on TBS.
McGog.
I want Angela Bassett to be in this movie. I think it's a good thing.
I like Angela Bassett a lot. I happen to think that I think it's kind of disgustingly bold how they're just kind of saying, like, hey, Marvel did that, we can do that.
Well, and I think admittedly, it's not going to happen. They're going on for like 20 years in the comics themselves, so why not do them in the movies, you know?
Basically, for you to know what we're talking about, Angela Bassett is being played in a role as, again, Amanda Waller, who is pretty much a hard-nosed government agent. In many ways, it's parallel to the same role as in Nick Fury for Marvel.
He's like, is that a vagina? Or virtual?
I think it's a vagine.
Listen, these vagoos are getting all over the place.
On its face. I call it vagina Veronica.
I think it's a vagog.
Look, it's got a goof tooth.
Anyway, guys.
My problem, okay, here the deal is, though, Nick Fury makes sense with the Marvel families because the Marvel families are all kind of insular, and once you get really high up there, like the Avengers and Captain America, he works for S.H.I.E.L.D., Iron Man makes weapons for S.H.I.E.L.D., Thor's a big-ass dude who's always fighting dudes that are fighting S.H.I.E.L.D. and stuff. So it makes sense to put S.H.I.E.L.D. in there, and that's actually a smart way to link the movies because Marvel's kind of done that. They've linked all their characters through S.H.I.E.L.D. in the last few years. The difference is DC doesn't really have that much linkage with the Checkmates and the Checkmate organization, whatever. And problematically speaking, the Checkmate organization has actually always been kind of like, the point of them is that they're just ridiculously shady organization that you know, like Suicide Squad and all that shit. And I mean, Greg Rucker wrote them, and he kind of turned them all around. So, but anyway, it just it's not intrinsically related to any of the mythology of any of the movies. And I kind of I don't what the fuck is Green Lantern? I don't know. I don't like the idea of it. Doesn't make any, you don't need it. You don't need it at all. It's obviously just something they're doing to link the movies.
I think it's more like they didn't, or maybe Jeff specifically or somebody decided that you know, they don't want Alan in the movie just because that's it might be a little bit confusing. And I understand. I actually think it's better without him in there just for clarity's sake. But
and to clarify, what we're talking about is the fact that Alan Scott was originally the first proposal for the script in the Green Lantern for the Green Lantern movie.
Well, I think that's actually that's a logical way to look at it. I mean, I just happen to think that even that whole subplot felt really awkward when I was reading it in the script. That
and the thing is, with her being compared to like Nick Fury over in the Marvel films, I don't think that's really apples to apples, because it's like DC isn't really, even after all their little summits about, oh, we need to get together and get our shit together about movies and stuff and make one unified thing or whatever. But even after all those, it still doesn't sound like that's what they're doing, because it's like we already heard from Nolan that he's, you know, approached to do the Superman, or at least kind of caretake the Superman reboot or whatever, and he's flat out said that it's not going to be a joint universe in that.
Well, I mean,
Superman, that's the flagship character of DC, and if you have Batman over here and Superman over here, it doesn't sound like that's what they're doing. I think it was no more complicated than just they said, oh, well, it can't be Alan, so who are we going to, who should we use? And Jeff was like, what about Amanda Waller?
Oh, wait, okay. No.
I wouldn't discount Alan as being the movie in the first place, because especially if Jeff Johns gets involved and if it looks like
impossible.
It's going to be full of in jokes, you might just shove them in there anyway. But I mean, I don't disagree that, and hopefully that's all it really is, but I also feel like they're
arbitrary.
I feel like they're not going to avoid linking them. It's possible they won't link the Batman movie. There might just be some kind of idea where Christopher Nolan's like, it would be stupid to link the Batman movies because it would. And Christopher Nolan's also suggested that if he does get a chance to do a third Batman movie, his premise will be that it'll be the last Batman movie in that storyline. He's kind of suggested that.
Yeah.
He's also, and Jeff Johns has also suggested specifically himself that he said, he's saying, like, I can't really talk about too much, but we are definitely talking about linking them up and blah, 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 blah.
All right. Well, aside from that, let's move on to the other news, is the fact that the Green Lantern costume for the movie is actually going to be fully CGI. So that means no actual need for, tailoring of any sort, just for probably a gigantic green suit he's going to be wearing.
Yeah, I guess he literally wears, like, a big green suit, like, if you were to, like, watch the film in it.
Real quick.
They're going to edit and be like, you know what, we don't need to add special effects.
Let's just add a gigantic symbol right here. We're done, people.
Real quick.
It's called the Green Lantern. We move on at this point. But yes, the CGI. I haven't heard anything from you, sorry. What do you think about this?
Oh, I think CGI might actually fit for the whole attempt, because the costume is supposed to be made of energy, so why not just simulate it with energy? I mean, you could, at this point, if they could do what they do with Avatar, they can make a half-decent-looking costume.
Yeah, that's what everybody's been saying, pretty much. Like, that's basically the voice of what the internet has been saying for the past week or so.
Can I ask, does anybody here have any problem with the CGI, CGI electric costume?
I do, to the extent that I think fully CGI care. I mean, Avatar, I want to say notwithstanding, but even Avatar, I mean, the special effects weren't perfect in that, and you're talking about billions of dollars thrown into it, 7 years of developing the technology, and him not really sharing the technology with anybody.
I mean, sure.
And I happen to think that the Green Lantern, Green Lantern movie is going to be released next year, right?
Sure,
I mean,
year. But Iron Man, the special effects in that.
But that's not. That's not what apples to apples, though.
It's a giant robot, not a suit.
I mean, Hal's not going to be CGI. We're just talking about texture mapping and, I don't know,
glow effects. Well, you got to think about also in Iron Man, all the wide shots were CG, but all the close-ups were they physically built the suit.
Yeah. And
you don't see his face in that. I mean, it will actually be a dude in a suit, but just parts will be
Here's my thing with it is the Where the Wild Things Are movie was like delayed by like almost a year because they had a process. What they did was they shot it with, they were like, we're just going to do CG on the faces. And then what they realized, like, you know what, we actually, because they want to do it because they just wanted to rush through filming, they didn't want to worry about the faces. They said, you know, we'll do it all in post, don't worry about it. And what ended up happening is they were like, you know, we don't have the technology for this, or whatever we thought we were going to do isn't working. So they had to delay the movie by a whole year to just get it to kind of catch up to itself, you know. And I'm afraid that what they're doing is, like, it's easier for us now, instead of building a whole costume, just put some fucking dots on them and we'll worry about it later and we'll just see what happens later. And I feel like that's, for me, just the premise of them
that's
doing that kind of
what's
shortcut.
Happening.
Huh?
Yeah. That's kind of what's happening, I would imagine.
Yeah, so I feel like them doing the shortcut laziness, that's like, you're already doing that and the project's just, I mean, you're already shooting and you don't even have a costume designed. It's kind of like,
they do have a costume design, and they have one of the best costume designers in the business doing
that. I'm sure they've gone through, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of designs to finally whittle down to whatever they picked. I mean, that's...
Well, I get a sense that they're not going to finalize the design until they put it on them, and then they're like, you know what, let's change it some more, so...
I think they had a design, because Ryan Reynolds said that he had a design, that he wore the suit. Like, he said it, I've worn it, and it's snug. So I think they have a design, and they have, like, a test copy of a suit.
Yeah, so they have a conceptual piece of a prototype suit that he has that he has tried on now.
I just hope they go on a different way now. I just hope it's not that suit, that fan mock-up that's been floating around.
My thing is, I feel like if he wore a prototype suit, I feel like the other argument is that he wore the prototype suit, and they're like, well, you know, we're not beholden to that. We can kind of change it. I just don't like the idea of them doing something at the last minute that is potentially so major. I think what you'll end up getting is a character that's going to look hopefully not true, but, I mean, you run the risk of looking at a character who looks like he's a CGI character. So what was the point of having Ryan Reynolds kind of just put his face – and like Spider-Man, put his face on the body, you know what I mean, so to speak, the whole movie. I guess maybe the mask. Did he even say if he's going to have a mask or not?
Well, he has to. I mean, it's the iconic symbol of his character.
It's Ryan Reynolds. So you may
But only for the fact that he's Ryan Reynolds, the actor made one screen time, that means we're just going to see him less in the suit.
They might do the Venom thing where it's like, you know, Spider-Man 3 where it's like...
He keeps taking it off.
Yeah, he keeps taking
it off. Like the Spider-Man thing.
He keeps dematerializing his mask or something.
Spider-Man takes his mask, like everybody does at the end of every Super movie. They take the mask off and stuff. Yeah. Except for Dark Knight, I guess. But yeah. I mean, that's, I don't know. It's one of those things. I'm sure it's a cool, honestly, I mean, I feel like I'm complaining about it because it seems kind of lazy and half-assed, but I'm interested to see it because I feel like that's an interesting way to go about it. And, it's not something we've seen before. So it could be cool.
All right. Moving on to another bit of news, in Sight News, please check out the interview with, Blackest Night, Flash artist, Scott Collins. It took a really long time for this to actually get done, but it's finally completed. You have our text interview with Scott Collins. You can find it at the greenlanterncorps.com. Make sure to check it out, and also find us. You can also jump onto the forums if you want afterwards, that you discuss your piece as to what you thought of it. You don't really have to, but aside from that, let's move on. We're moving on to our actual topic.
You're a beautiful person, Kuhan.
We're gonna wrap up. For the fact that for this long, almost year, like past year now, we've talked about Blackest Night, the giant discussions of everything that's happened, this giant saga of mixtures of light that has been going on, and we're going to pretty much sum up our feelings towards it, basically, the main eight issues and possibly the tie-ins of this gigantic Geoff Johns run saga.
Geoff Run.
Wrap it up, you know, again, you know, eight issues himself came out of Blackest Night, where, you know, from point A to point B, it went from Hal Jordan getting a ragtag team of wanted murderers and sadists and different colored genre rings to the biggest end fight of all time between death itself and the creation of life, and learning that the DC universe is in fact created by this white entity. And the Guardians of the Universe are in no way the eldest things in the universe now, and neither is the center of the universe Oa at all. So a lot of changes has occurred in the DC universe in general, with this gigantic event that had just passed, that just ended recently in the past 2 months. So basically, what do you guys think of this giant episodic, giant space drama that had occurred.
I feel like somebody ran a train on me. You know, like.
I like I said point A to point B, but I think you should have said like point G to point H, because this is like, you know, it's like a middle, like it's supposed to be like an end, but it's more like a middle of.
Yeah. Right, it's supposed to be the third
chapter. It's like point late C to point slightly later C. Yeah.
This was supposed to be an end point of a trilogy that Geoff Johns has laid out, his rebirth through Sinestro Cold War to Blackest Night.
I think it's ridiculous that Geoff Johns compared this to the Star Wars trilogy, because the Star Wars trilogy ended. And
then it came back with prequels.
Yeah, I mean, like, it came back with prequels, sure. But it's not like it kept going on forever and ever with George Lucas writing
technically it did through novels and novelizations, of course, of Star Wars. But for his stake in the film franchise, it did end. It had an ending.
Expanded.
Yeah, like Jeff Grant Johns go write some Green Lantern novels.
Yeah, exactly. Expanded GL universe. You know?
Oh. Words.
Words are hard to write.
No, but again, what did you guys feel through this entire event? Did you enjoy the changes that have occurred in the grand landscape of the DC universe now that we find out the gigantic importance of Earth? Fool.
I mean, I will say that the whole thing was fun. It was entertaining, but. In the end, it's not so much a story, it's just a vehicle for DC to facilitate the changes and their horrible message that, you know, the second and third tier and generation superheroes are now being kind of phased out. And like their new tagline now is, what do they say, the original superheroes? There's some tagline I've been seeing around now. But yeah, it's a very sad, unfortunate message, and it's hard to mistake, I mean, and it's... That's the taste that I'm left with after this.
I think this is it's an event of... I think I would say not that it was fun because I feel like it was too continuity heavy and all the continuity changes were very specific and very polarizing. And not to say polarizing with fans, but very drastic and very facilitating for one specific ideology, one specific creative identity.
Yeah.
And it was almost exhausting trying to keep up with just continuity as opposed to like trying to enjoy the story.
I know what you mean. I mean, since like Secret Origin, even a bit before that, it's like Jeff Johns doesn't literally write so much as I feel like he has like a notepad next to him, like in bullet points of things he doesn't like about various points in the character's history or foibles or what happened here and there. And like this is how he starts his script writing process, his quote unquote script writing process. Like he'll just go down the line and make sure he addresses this one and this one and this one. And then, oh yeah, if there's time, let's see if we can have some dialogue and some, you know, maybe a story of some sort, but and that's how it begins, I feel like. I don't know.
Well, before we get back to you, let's actually hear a little positive note, because I know, Brandon, you read it over again, and you actually said the second time around, you actually found it more interesting.
A lot more interesting.
Well, then you stopped to the fourth issue, right?
The core mini or everything?
No, just the core. Just the core.
You think he's going to read 20,000 issues? That's a lot of comics.
I did enjoy it more. I'm not saying that I enjoyed it altogether, but I did enjoy it more. The first couple of issues do seem dialogue heavy, which was completely different from the last couple of issues. It's very slow paced from the start, which is... I guess a good thing because it builds up to a much faster paced story, though not much happens in those fast paced moments. But I do get the sense on the second read that it was plotted out to be from this slow thing to this fast thing. Like, for where we were complaining that nothing's happening, it's just Black Lanterns, Black Lanterns, Black Lanterns from the start. I think he intently did that, so when we get to this point of, oh, now we got heroes being Black Lanterns, now we got heroes being deputies, now we got white entities popping up, I think that all that was done purposely to say, okay, you sat through the timid parts, now here's action, action, action. The problem with that is just the delivery just didn't, it just wasn't there. But
can I ask you, you said you only read the core mini again. So that means that was issues 1-8, right?
Yeah.
So did you have any problem following it, seeing the fact that you really did have to read the Green Lantern books themselves, not the core, or none of the tie-in issues, but the Green Lantern book itself plus the core mini, so you didn't have any problem following it through?
I didn't have a problem following it through. I think the most obvious problem was the Rainbow Corps stepping in out of nowhere. I mean, it is explained, but it's just a big page of dialogue explaining it.
And there's certain threads that are introduced in the first couple issues that like have whole 2-3 page spreads devoted to them, and then they're solved in ancillary titles and not solved within the miniseries itself. So
that's true. Stuff that's begun there but it's resolved elsewhere. That's
I feel like after reading it, I remember because it's funny how the, I mean, it's interesting because it wasn't so much that it had a lot of twists and turns, it was just the event had a completely different focus every issue. But every issue was basically the same. Like, the heroes stood around telling each other about themselves, giving each other exposition about their feelings and telling each other, like, explaining to the audience what they're supposed to represent ideologically. And at the end, somebody turned out to be a Lantern. Like, the first issue, everybody was Dead Lantern. The next issue was the villains. Then the issue after that, it was, I think, more villains? No, I'm sorry. At the end of the second issue, it was the Justice League. At the third issue, I think it was more villains. The fourth issue was, I think, more Black Lanterns. And then the fifth issue was the dead heroes. Then it was the deputies. And then, at the end, and then it was Sinestro. And then it was Hal and everybody else. So, I mean, I feel like structurally speaking, that's why I reread it, and it was really hard to read because it just doesn't flow. And then at one point, it becomes a Flash event for like two issues, and the Flash tells Mara and Adam how important they are, and then they just completely vanish from the story. You know, so I mean, structurally, and then
you guys are
Hal's
so
barely in it.
Oh, this is great. Okay, bye.
Yeah, right now you guys are Superman and Wonder Woman, and then Wonder Woman shows up and does some important shit. So it's like, sorry, she's Wonder Woman. I misspoke. You know, and,
she's Wonder Woman. Bye.
And then Hal. It's barely in the story at all, doing anything except in the first issue, a little tiny bit. And then at the end, it's like, just to remind you, Geoff Johns forgot that this was a Green Lantern event. Sorry. Here we go.
Well, can't you guys look at that as a
even positive? Even still, he didn't do anything in the last issue.
Right.
I mean, I know you
ran at the
end. Now I want to get to, you know, what's your opinion? I want to get to another person who sort of enjoyed the story. Muzard, you actually enjoyed the story as well, right? You,
From the beginning, you
actually, you know, outright express how much you liked the story as to how it was going, right?
When I look back, I see things I like and things I don't like. The main problem was not so much some of the things that happened in it, it's just the pacing is really what killed it to me.
No, you reread the core mini by itself, right?
I've read some of it, yeah.
Alright, so, reading it again, you found it to be easy to read or less easy to read?
I read several hundred page books in a day easily, so it's not really hard for me to read through comics at all. But even then, it's still kind of feels like it drags at certain points.
I'm talking about, so you said it was dragging?
It did drag at certain points, yeah. And that was probably the main problem for some people, was that at first it kind of seemed way too slow. I mean, we kind of got a little bit of the same old for the first three issues, and only when we get towards the fourth issue do we finally get that 100% and then things start changing. I think if they could have cut out some of the slack and let some of the minis just pick up on what the main book did at first, and of course cut down to the minis as well, I think they could have streamlined the story and it would have been twice as good.
All right.
You know, I mean, I feel like a hypocrite for saying this, but I mean, Final Crisis. I love Final Crisis, but Final Crisis also, as you read it, every issue is completely different and brand new characters pop in and out and have different things to do. But I feel like at least that had one specific ideological through line, that the first issue started and introduced ideas that spread throughout the rest of the issues. By the last issue, it came back to the same characters and they all interrelated and stuff. And the fact that Superman basically took the Hal position in that, where he vanished in issue one and then didn't show up again to the last issue. I mean, but that worked for the story and that's what the story was kind of about, you know, so it didn't bother me as much. Whereas in this just kind of felt like even when stuff, as Muse said, gotten going, when the battery got to 100, it was just quote unquote events that never went anywhere. I mean, it is interesting that Flash gets a blue ring, but it didn't actually do anything, right? And then it is interesting that Lex Luthor gets an orange ring, but then it didn't actually do anything, right? So, I mean, that's my problem with it.
Well, to be fair, the orange ring looks like it might just be going somewhere.
Yeah, well, now with the solicits for the next whatever.
But that's not to do with pretending what we're talking about now. I mean, it
shouldn't have been introduced.
It was introduced
in this story, not right. Just in the... Because that's the problem with it. It's not a story. It's a universe primer. Like, it's designed to kind of set up the status quo for all these series, as opposed to what it should have been, which is a story beginning, middle, and end.
So it's what counts.
Well, is that a problem? Because this is a
only because
DC universe story.
No, but I mean, as a narrative.
So
I mean,
it should cater to the rest of the universe, right?
No, I agree, and I think there should be, I mean, like Final Crisis, or like Infinite Crisis, or like Crisis on Infinite Earth, it should be one big story that is all about taking one universe, changing it, and ushering all these new storylines and stuff. And I agree with that. I just happen to think that, I mean, even Infinite Crisis, which I don't love, had a more of an ending and more of a through line in the story. Like, it had a narrative. This doesn't have a narrative. This is just a bunch of stuff that happened. I mean, you could have just given me solicits. This is just basically reading really, really expensive solicits, you know?
I think what it did was take those plot lines, those future plot lines that we're going to get in Brightest Day, and then say, okay, this is the end point. Now we just need to tell a story that that brings back these characters, kills off these characters, put these characters here, here, and here. And
see,
I think it did.
But the way you're saying it is that Brightest Day was always intended to be the end point. That's what you're saying right now. You're saying right now, Brightest Day. I'm trying to understand. So, you know, to clarify, you're saying right now the way you thought of it was the Brightest Day is your endpoint, and we need a story to express and to explain what's going to happen at your endpoint. Am I right?
Not necessarily Brightest Day as a story, but the DC universe under the Brightest Day. So,
but the thing is, we weren't actually aware of Brightest Day.
As fans, we don't need to know what Jeff's endpoint is. But I'm saying from a Jeff Johns perspective,
Perspective was, and I'm sorry, correct me if I'm wrong, he expressed how he had a trilogy in mind. He had Rebirth, he had Sinestro Corps War, and then he had midway through Blackest Night. Am I right?
No, but listen, though, but, I mean, the problem with it is that he's been, Rebirth happened, Rebirth was a more or less standalone story that had threads that eventually led into the Sinestro Corps War. Every issue between Rebirth and Sinestro Corps War, except
like
for a couple issues about
like a New Hope and the Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, and all it did was eventually lead into Sinestro Corps Wars. And then when Sinestro Corps Wars ended, it barely ended, and it just said, listen, the next storyline we're going to do is the Black Knight, and that's what Abin Sur was
like
talking about.
Empire
this is what the Green Lantern
is back in the Return of the Jedi.
And the whole, every story leading up to Blackest Night was specifically talking about how Blackest Night was the end game of everything. Like, this is the biggest shit that ever happened. And as soon as Blackest Night started, about halfway through it, it dovetailed into what it ended up being, which is Solicits, you know? And then the Abin Sur thing, that was what the most insulting thing about the whole thing was that Sinestro makes a point to say now Abin Sur's, you know, threat is like ended. And I'm like, so wait, this issue, which is basically just Blackest Night, I mean, sorry, Brightest Night, I'm sorry. This issue, Blackest Night number 8, which is actually really just Brightest Day number 0, is supposed to be the culmination of the last 4 years or whatever, 2.5 years of Lantern stories, and that's bullshit, because it wasn't a narrative. And the narrative, all it did was, you know, the narrative just kind of went back and forth and back and forth, saying, like, you know, the next story is going to be even better, which is, like, Brightest Day. Like, well, I guess when we get into that, I'll talk about that. But, I mean, that's the whole thing. It ended up being, it's not bad as a starter. If all of Blackest Night was one big DC special that was like one big issue, like that would have been awesome, that led into something else, but it was supposed to be an ending, not another beginning. I mean, it's condescending.
Right, that's what I was trying to get to, you know, try to point out, the fact that this entire thing was supposed to be the end game. I mean, how am I supposed to feel how this entire series was supposed to be his end of his trilogy at first, not until he brought up that it was a trilogy of trilogies for whatever reason. Whatever that means. I'm not saying that, you know, it's bad, but in the way that it presented itself, that's what sort of irks me a bit, because in many ways, I want a definite end, in a way. I want a end. I know the story's going to continue, because I know there's going to be plenty of Green Lantern books out there, but I would like a end for a series rather than, and so it now begins. You know, I had, from Rebirth, the ending of Rebirth saying, you know, Sinestro will be back, yada, 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 he'll come back, and so forth. You know, the enemy of enemies will return. Then Sinestro Corps War, your gigantic free-for-all battle of the galaxy between, it's at stake now, and your enemy of enemies isn't truly your enemy of enemies. And then when Blackest Night comes out, this is supposed to be the whole battle of your enemy is now your friend because now the greatest enemy of all time is here, but yet it isn't. This isn't my end. You are now just getting a prelude to what will more likely be another story that will continue on to another story that may continue on.
Yeah, I mean, basically, they did fight Necron, and they did defeat Necron, and they did send back Necron back to wherever, and that is quote-unquote an ending. But the problem is the way they ended up defeating Necron ended up being another 15 pages of, we don't know how we beat him, because something happened, we're not quite sure what happened, but let's do a whole year's worth of story before we get an answer to that. And that's insane to me. That's insane to me that people just gobbled this up and put
it. Is it? I mean, okay.
Right. I mean,
yeah, because Infinite Crisis ended with all the different setups of all the characters. And Xandian Crisis, Infinite, and even Final Crisis more or less ended with setup for a bunch of other characters and stuff. That's fine. I don't mind that, because that's changing the status quo, and that's what Final Crisis as... even thematically, that's what Final Crisis was all about, that that's what these crises do. But the problem is, it's not... It isn't just that it sets up another story. It's specifically just, it's, that's all it is. It ends up being just a prelude to another story, which isn't a story in and of itself. You know,
right, but, like, okay,
how condescending is that? That it gives us four pages.
Let's actually move on from our thoughts. Kuhan, you haven't said anything about how you felt for Body Excited for yourself. What do you think? All
right. Well, my opinion didn't really change very much. I mean, you know, it was for what it was. I guess it was a decent story. I mean. I don't know. I don't really have very strong opinions. It was a story that I read, and I mean, it could have been better, definitely. It was kind of stupid. I don't know. I don't even know.
Okay, for what we've been talking about, how do you feel that this, before being the aforementioned end of a trilogy, before being mentioned as his trilogy, you know, again, set off of his trilogy of trilogies, what did you think when the status quo was changed from being, this is going to be my end story, to no, this is going to be my beginning story, to something else?
I felt like it was retarded, because he's like, yeah, this is going to be the end, and oh, well, I guess I wanted to write the stories for the 15 and a half years, so I'm going to... this is actually the beginning of the beginning.
Does anybody think this may be in reference to the fact that he was promoted to his job title?
Definitely. You know, I think it had a lot to do with it.
Well, here's my thing, though. That's exactly what it is. That it's obviously just a money-making bullshit fucking scheme that has no integrity whatsoever, and that's my biggest. The baldness of this fucking shallow bullshit evil is what's really bothering me about it. But in all fairness, think about if Final Crisis was the last comic story you ever read in your entire life, you'd be satisfied. Except for the Batman thing at the end. But even that, you can just kind of read thematically if you want. But that technically is the story to end all stories. If you read Infinite Crisis, except for the Jay Garrick thing, and the stupid little coda at the end with Superboy. If you read that, you could say that's the last comic book story you ever needed to read, because it had a beginning, middle, and end, and it did set up the next year, but it worked as a solid event in itself. Crisis on Infinite Earths, that is definitely, you could definitely say that was the last comic story you ever needed to read, so on and so forth. Blackest Night, there's no way, I feel terrible for Ryan that was the last Green Lantern comic he ever read in his entire life, because he literally stopped in the first third of the story, you know, like, that's crazy to me.
Alright. And again, most of us all have different opinions. Brandon, you enjoyed it for what it was because, one, you're not deterred by the fact that you're going to continue reading. That this just in bigger, you know, this just strengthens your resolve to read more of what's going to go down in later issues. Am I right?
As a fan of the DC universe as a whole, I can't say I hated this series.
Right.
I just can't. I like growth and.
But is it really growth?
They literally went backwards, though.
Not growth as in characters. I'm just saying
growth as in characters. Growth as in what you think. I don't know.
It's like a tumor grows, you know.
You mean like Martian Manhunter's taller? Like,
no, he's generally meaning growth in the fact that stories will prosper from this, not for the fact that there are characters that have been destroyed by the story.
So basically, you're just happy that the characters are still going to be.
I absolutely hate the idea that they're killing off characters just for their older counterparts to thrive. I hate that.
Oh, Tempest! Poor Tempest.
And Adam.
Tempest is just shocking. I mean, Adam, he was part of the fucking Silver Age.
Where is Ryan Choi?
He gives a shit about that, but fucking Tempest, that is just such fucking bullshit.
I'm not even an Adam fan, but the Ryan Choi shit just pisses me off. It's just like, I mean, why...
Did he die? I didn't know that.
No, I think he's just dead.
No, he's still alive.
He's essentially dead now, but I mean... Why even go through all the motions? Why spin all those wheels and create him? Have Grant Morrison draw him up, and then have Gail Simone run with him, just to have him like sidelined after a while when they figured out that no one really buys.
Because Ray Palmer's such a really popular character. I know I was on the message for years, not a crazy person slamming away saying Ray Palmer should come back. I mean, I was legions of fans were begging for it, just like Barry Allen. Legions of fans who The demographic being people who are 5 years, younger than when he was killed, were begging for Barry Allen to come back. So that's why they brought him back. I mean, fan demand. That's really what it is.
Now, let's actually, this story now went into Brightest Day. And Brightest Day number 0 it's the latest issue just came out from. That's going to be the new story arc that we're going to be introduced to, that we're going to be now looking at for the next couple of years, like next year now.
Well, at least next couple of years now. Right?
Yeah, but the Brightest Day banner will probably not probably last for the rest of the year. I doubt it's going to go into the next year. It's 2011. Yeah. I'm more like to say that this is going to be our next story arc for the next year or so, that we're going to have the banner on top. Now, here we're introduced to many of the aftermath of what happened after Blackest Night, and where many of the characters in the book are calling it their brightest day, the day everything is now shiny, as we all see.
Oh, that was lame as hell. Yeah, that's
as we're not seen by all these fancy, like, you know, daylight shots, except for the dust scene.
I mean, everybody in the DC Universe had at least two or three major members of their family die on them, and, like, Martian Manhunter came back, so it's like, this is the best thing that's ever happened. They actually think it's the brightest day? Like, fucking, your girlfriend got turned to salt. Your son was murdered, and you think it's the brightest day. That's fucking bullshit.
It's pretty ridiculous to mention the fact that technically hundreds of people had to have died for whatever cockamamie reason, yeah. Necron needed to be revived by these hearts, died for him, and people are calling this the greatest day of their lives.
Well, for those who came back, there. It's probably somewhat good.
And Dub's like, I had a sister? Did I? Oh, well. Hawk, let's go kick some ass.
she has to stop and come here to him.
Oh, the most insulting thing is Aquaman has sex with Mera, and then the next day is like, I kind of feel bad about Garth. She's like, forget it, he's in heaven. And he's like, all right. That's your fucking son!
Yeah, I know.
That's your fucking son!
I know. It's
raised him from he was two, he was like 28. That's like two and a half decades of your son, and he's fucking dead. You're fine with it.
It would have been better off if they just didn't mention him at all. Like, it was just, like,
it would have been, like, oh, yeah. Yeah, it would have been such a slap in the face if they didn't mention Garth. What were you trying to say?
You had the thing where Mara's all like, oh, I never wanted kids anyway. And you're like, is that just something she said because she was pissed off? Or is that what she really meant when she said, oh, forget about him? Oh, I really didn't care.
Well, there was another thing in there, I remember, when something about she's holding, oh, I think it was Wonder Woman. Wasn't there a scene where Wonder Woman kind of, like, looked at Mara, or because Carolyn said, like, she's hiding a secret from herself and from Aquaman.
Did
I imagine that?
No.
It was like Green Lantern.
It was sort of one of those, like, off-charted moments in Green Lantern that really didn't make any sense. No, it was Wonder Woman number 3, wasn't it? It was Wonder Woman number 3 when that came about.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Why are the guys in Iron Heights allowed to wear their costumes? Wes, you might know that.
It's a federal penitentiary, so there's no dress code. That's only
what
thing I could.
Good answer.
It's been company policy.
Who told you that?
Just to make a clerical. Just to clarify most things, if anyone hearing this podcast would have read Brightest Day number 0 and have read Brightest Day Flash number 1. In that one pin-up where they show The Wanted, you actually see him wearing prison-issued, what you call those hats? Yeah, Scully hats.
Oh. Yeah.
So it's pretty, yeah, skull caps, honestly.
The beanie.
That's the correct term. But getting back to Brightest Day number 0, much of the change that occurred here was the fact that, yes, Aquaman is now up and about, sort of mourning for the loss of Garth. What else occurred? Hawk and Dove going against extremists. Flash.
Hawk does.
Hawk goes against extremists, while Dove apparently sits this one out. One of the biggest points of this issue was the fact that Boston Brand, the Dead Man, as most people are known him as, the once dead spirit of the DC Universe who's been more around more often than the Spectre has, is alive again at the end of Blackest Night number 8. And is
Can I say one thing about Dead Man?
Okay, well, what is it?
It's weird. It's like, okay, like Aquaman, he died, he was the Sea Dweller and stuff, and he regenerated his hand, and he regenerated from being the Sea Dweller and stuff like that, and Martian Manhunter regenerated from all of that. And yet Deadman comes back and he's like, oh, I got this old knee injury from like way back. And it's like, what?
Apparently regular guy gets shafted. Well, that's what I was trying to get to the point as. The Deadman is now in possession of the only White Lantern ring, as far as we know.
Here's the deal, though. I just think Deadman, my problem with it is Deadman is a cipher. You know, he's got kind of an attitude and kind of a boss-y attitude, and that's really it. Because Deadman's always been kind of like whoever the whims of the writer who's writing him. He's actually really limited in terms of...
Why do you have to have a boss-y attitude? His name is Boston. Doesn't mean he has a boss-y attitude. God.
Is he from Boston? Am I wrong? I thought he was from Boston.
I don't think he is. I think his name is just Boston.
I just think he's too much of a cipher, and I'm not that interested in him coming back. I think it's just a cute idea to be like, there you go. And I mean, the art was actually really good in this. I think we have to talk about the art really quick.
Sort of a way to connect things together, I'm sure. Whatever. I really liked the issue. I thought it was very entertaining.
Actually, you know, I was surprised by how much I liked it. It got really boring about halfway through the John part, because I just feel like that went on. I mean, that was right after that, I don't know, the Hawk people part, I feel like they just talked and talked and talked, because I think it was just Geoff Johns' expositional dialogue, like, instead of having emotions or demonstrating things, I'm going to tell you that they're doing this kind of thing. And then you get, I think the Maxwell Moore thing was awesome. You didn't like the art?
Really? No, I thought the art was good through the most part, but the Hawk pages where he was kicking in the anatomy was terrible. And the Maxwell Lord, and I think those three chapters of this book were like the most boring. The Hawks, the Maxwell Lord, awesome. And Osiris. That was terrible.
That was good.
I thought
the Maxwell Lord.
What did you guys think about the Jade scene with Sornik and Kyle?
I think this is unfortunately this is the start of Sornik's character, which we always thought was going to happen, being kind of limited just into being Kyle's girlfriend, you know. And I think that I didn't like what does she care that Jade is back? Like she's a fully capable, confident woman, you know, who happens to love Kyle and has her own personality. And now all of a sudden she's going to waste 3 days keeping his ex girlfriend away from what is she like 5 years old in the kindergarten? Like,
I thought it was cute. Love is. Well, you got to remember that love is new to her. She's never been in love before, she told us, and this is she kind of is like a pleasure in that sense.
Listen, what's love got to do with it?
I agree with Eric the fact even though she's never been in love before, her character is still independent. She should be able to not just be Kyle's girlfriend, yeah. And I hope it doesn't end up that way.
To be fair, but what is the story in that?
I think you always expect the ex-girlfriend to be jealous, or the new girlfriend to be jealous of the ex-girlfriend. I think it would be more interesting with what they actually did when Jade first became Kyle's girlfriend. The whole thing was she was kind of sort of jealous of Donna, and then her and Donna became best friends, and that was like the whole gimmick. So I think every time Kyle gets a girlfriend that's a superhero, they always look at the old superhero like, oh, I can't believe you had sex with Donna Troy, and then they get all pissy about it for several issues. And I think Sornik Nacho would be like, I'm like a surgeon on a planet. I'm an awesome-ass superhero. I'm dope as shit. I don't need to worry about you, you're fine. Fucking Jade, like what the fuck? You cheated on Kyle the last time you saw him. I'm not worried about you.
Some of that should have been in there.
She's not a human.
I think because she, and then especially the last time you see the issue, she's got her arm, she's like cowering in the corner like a little girl, like in the back while Kyle's talking to her. Also, Kyle's character is like wet noodly. I don't think Kyle.
That seems very awkward in terms of writing there. I'm sorry. That whole
thing was a little bit. Yeah. It was a little bit truncated. Like it was like they give the speech and then they kind of fly off. It was
predictable.
I just think, Kyle.
Yeah, this is my new girlfriend, so, you know, go to your dad. See ya.
I think he was too soft. I think Kyle, because I think, especially if you read the one or two lines Kyle has in Blackest Night, they're very sappy shit. He's like, everybody loves Care Bears, and like, it's like that seems to be identification with Kyle. That he's like,
Care Bear.
Yeah, he's like Happy Bear, and that's what Geoff Johns' association with Kyle, and especially comments about Kyle.
Are you saying that you think Jeff wrote those three pages? I don't think he did.
I guarantee you, Jeff.
I think he did. I thought he did.
I don't
read what Kyle says. There's no way Tomasi would have a 14 box speech saying love 75,000 times. Like, no way. Tomasi's smart writer than that when it comes to Kyle. Tomasi's always been a minimalist. Right. Kyle. But
I think it's in John's contract that he doesn't have to write non-Hal Kyle scenes.
Hey guys.
Well, that's why he writes Kyle. He wants people to read this and go, wow, Kyle is fucking a wet noodle.
I guess it kind of does. It kind of does leave you with the sense that Kyle, what a jerk. He's just kind of leaving her with that and then flying off with his new girlfriend. That's kind of a dick move. Yeah, I guess it kind of does leave you with that sense.
Now, let's actually discuss the one portion of that story, that little section that's supposed to be making us
real quick,
think what is.
I did like the little bit from Jade where she's kind of direct, well, not even implying, she's pretty much saying, like, if she pretty much tells Sorenik that if she wanted to be with Kyle, she would be with him, like, Sorenik or no Sorenik, like, if she snapped her fingers, like, Kyle.
Yeah. Kyle will come running back like that.
I thought it was cute, but, okay.
Cool. Now, again, the parts here that we're supposed to be, you know, the most interested in, even though we're not as much, is the fact that, you know, Jade seems to be, something's going on with Jade, apparently, there. A bit of black ooze was actually...
Jade was actually, I mean, not for nothing, Jade was actually a character I don't think gets talked about a lot, because she's got a lot of ties to other characters, and it diminishes her as a female character. But as a female character, she was always kind of cool, because she's had, like, every single possible career a female character's had. So she's a model, she's a waitress, she's a photographer. But at least she has an identity.
So is Donna Troy.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
That's clearly nothing to do with what I was talking about. What I was trying to say is that the fact that we were trying to talk about the fact that, you know, the mysteries of what's trying to be done in black and white.
Of course. They haven't given us any clues as to what the mystery is. It's just like, look white, look white, look white, look white. That's all it really is. So this issue is just really the little thing.
Well, it's a zero issue.
I'm going to say that Jason...
And it's going to be revealed in another series completely.
I'm not complaining about that. No, I don't care about that. I know that. I'm okay with that. I'm just saying, like, I don't want to talk about what the mysteries are, because then you're literally just bald speculation, because... As a matter of fact, you found out more on the solicits in the back of this issue what's happening with everybody, because I didn't realize that Max Lord made everybody forget who he was until I read the solicit for Justice League Generation Lost. It said he made everybody forget who he was. I'm like, oh, that's what he was doing in that first?
Yeah,
I had no idea.
Yeah,
I didn't think he was close enough.
I didn't know. You know, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that until just now.
You weren't supposed to.
I honestly thought he bled out and died.
Yes, me too. I didn't know that until 2 seconds ago. I didn't even know that until...
Yeah, I know that was the risk, but the way it was drawn made me actually think he bled out and died.
It's like Jesus.
Well, didn't he say there's a pulse or his leg is shaking or some shit?
Yeah. But your body still twitches before you die.
Is there anything on that splash page with the trailer splash page that remotely interests anybody?
You talking about the final page?
That's actually like the fourth to last, or ninth to last page. The one where Boston shoots his head up and then they have all the artists in the next, like, year with their
deal. Yeah.
Only because I'm a Flash fan. The Zoom core, I hate the idea, but I'm interested in just what'll happen.
It's funny, because I don't believe that's supposed to be Professor Zoom.
I think maybe you're right. I think that is a Zoom core, but
I believe that's the reverse Flash costume and everything. That's a core in a sense, but I don't think it's who.
Oh, it's supposed to be the Flash family just in reverse.
Exactly.
Oh, that'd be a lot better. I'd be okay with that.
I think the joke, the Maxwell Lord with the gun behind his back, is actually a pretty funny joke, but only if that wasn't actually going to show up in an issue. If that was just a joke, but clearly that's like pulled from an issue, whatever. But.
Probably gonna smoke Jamie.
Jaime. Probably.
No, I'm sorry. If Jaime Reyes is taken out for whatever reason, I seriously don't know what I'm gonna do with DC.
Y'all kinda can't.
He has to come back in the future as the Black Beetle. They revealed that he's the Black Beetle.
Yeah, no, but still, I'm just saying, like, I think he's Hispanic until they get another headline Hispanic character, they can't kill him.
That's the future, though, so nobody cares. It'll be gone, like, in a week.
My problem is the Hawk and Dove makeout thing, because I feel like that's such an obvious place for that story to go, and it's probably the only place that story can go. So to show us that is kind of like, well, I guess I don't need to read any more Hawk and Dove stories, because that's just their... And then they're going to break up, and I can't wait for them to break up.
Yeah, it's weird that I read that part. He says he has to take midterms or finals next tomorrow.
Isn't this a grown-ass man?
Who?
Hawk.
Hawk.
Oh, Hawk. Yeah. Well, you know, it's whenever Geoff Johns decides that the continuity is the cleanest.
It's surprising to say that Ronnie Raymond, the Firestorm, doesn't remember anything.
Dude is young.
No, he doesn't remember anything.
Yeah,
he doesn't remember anything post-death.
How
that makes sense.
Yeah, I thought he was
exactly.
Dead.
He doesn't remember anything after he was killed by, what's his name?
In Identity Crisis.
Yeah, and then he
Shadow Thief
by the sword. He doesn't remember anything until after that point. Even though
I think he's lying. I think he's going to say
everybody else
and he doesn't know because it's an emotion.
Because during
what do you mean? Who remembers Nobody remembers what they were doing as a Black Lantern, except for the ones that were already alive.
Not as a Black Lantern.
Dave remembers everything.
Forget that. No, not as a Black Lantern, but like,
after
he died.
You're right. She could have been told after the fact, like, oh, by the way, yeah, you kind of did some things, Jade. Sorry.
Didn't she also say she crawled out of, at one point she said she crawled out of Mogo?
Yeah, did she said, something about rising from the grass or some shit.
Hold on, let's hear
something. Really? It doesn't even matter. Like,
I've entirely missed that.
Yeah, I've been 100% seeing Data White Ring in my hand crawled out from under Mogo's grass, which is funny because I don't remember seeing that in Brightest Day. They just kind of flashed and they were all there.
it's damage control for Blackest Night number 8, where it's like, wait, why would? Isn't she inside Mogo's core? I mean, how did she just get whisked here?
It's Jeff Conning. This must be a precedent. He's Jeff Conning literally a week later. Like, that must be some kind of precedent. This must be a first. I don't like that. I think the whole Ronnie being a prick and, like, honestly, how hasn't he been dead for years that everybody at his college is still going to college? Like, and like, sweet, we're still here.
What I'm trying to understand is that apparently the primary body for Firestorm now is Ronnie Raymond again.
Yeah, that's so predictable.
Yeah,
the Black Band. They send the Black Band to the back of the bus, literally. I mean,
yeah,
exactly.
It's offensive.
He's been put in the back seat.
You get balls. Yeah.
It offended me. Missed me and irks me for the fact of you as a black Lantern killed his girlfriend, and now you also steal his power.
And now you're the star.
Now you're the star.
I guess in Jeff Johns' world, that's what you got to do to get ahead in the world.
Well, he's like a white frat boy who probably date rapes the young, which seems to be Jeff Johns' like core demographic. So of course he's going to be the star. Did Star City, the explosion of Star City, was that? I'm confused. I thought something happened with I think that's the White Ring did that, made everything a star, right? That's what's supposed to have happened, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Prometheus didn't make a big star blow up pattern, did he?
Unless he's trying to be ironic when he blew it up.
Well, Prometheus is a dick like that.
No, I think the White Ring must have spread the destruction a little further to make it a star.
So basically, the life entity said, there's no need.
It looked like it just cleaned all the debris out, but it didn't really make clear if it was carving out a star or whatever.
The guy returning to work and like, oh, finally, they let us come back into the back into the city. Gotta clear out this office. Oh, gotta tree up my ass.
Which is true, because
actually, if you read the Green Arrow, it shows that the star shape was there before the trees.
There you go. All right. Well,
I guess it wasn't too.
No.
In all fairness,
if you look at Green Arrow 31. They show the fucking skyline of the city, and it's not a fucking star.
Well, I'm talking about 32.
Well, maybe there was a lot of buildings that were just ruined, but weren't really, like, they were still standing, but, like, still fucking.
Clean up that happened, yeah.
So it retconned itself in the
middle. Actually,
they came out in the same week, 32 and
I like that idea.
About 31 and 32.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. I think it looks stupid, but I actually kind of like the idea that Star City has a big, gigantic Central Park shaped arm in the middle. That's actually, I don't like mine. That is a...
And that's it's also supposed to be more present to the fact that Green Arrow is not supposed to become more Robin Hood.
Yeah, which, again,
because
I don't
know. He's pretty much banned from a city.
It was James Robinson that said at a convention, he said that Star City will become the most important city in the DCU, quote-unquote.
Well, probably because it's featured in Brightest Day. It's obviously something going on there, but yeah.
Because of a force?
I don't care. What's the Sinestro splash page? I don't know why he thought that was interesting to put in there, because we all know that this is just going to lead into the fact that all the new Guardians are going to have to watch the White Lantern together. So it's not like Sinestro's going to get the white power back. I mean, this is all just... This is just like
smoke.
Clear misdirection.
Smoke and mirrors and misdirection. Yeah.
Just like start beating him over the head with it. It's like, it's my White Lantern! It's like, damn it, Sinestro, you turned evil again.
Andrew, what were you going to say?
I think we talked about this last night, but that was off cast. But did anyone read the or look at the Zatanna preview?
No,
not bringing it up right now. No,
I don't think Eric didn't hear that, did he?
We're trying to keep this.
I saw something about her boner. You're trying to say she had a gigantic boner.
Yeah, raging hard on in the first
damn
page.
Damn it!
Page, right?
Well, I'm trying to keep as Magog as we can. All
right,
guys.
My gods were right out of my face in this
one. So guys, when we were complaining about David Finch's art, did that make it to the show or not?
Who's we? You were the only one complaining, weren't you?
I think I complained a little too, but I don't know if I was.
The coloring on. Max Lothera, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, the color.
I haven't complained yet. That looks awful. Like, absolutely awful. He should not be drawing comic books.
Okay. Thank you for listening, and hope we
see. Fuck Finch is my motto. Welcome.
Thank you for listening, everybody. And be sure to come back next time. If you want to find us online, you can go to thegreenlanterncorps.com. If you want to check out the blog, you can find it at glspotlight.wordpress.com. If you want to find us on YouTube, you can go to youtube.com/glspotlight or find us individually at youtube.com/neildoublebane or youtube.com/ssjkuhan. You can find half the cast on Twitter at glspotlight, at consciousb, and at kuhan. And also, if you want to find Ryan, you can find him at Avenger Files. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us next week.
Be sure to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening thing, Room Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com. Also, check out the Roy Kirk Method, performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at www.freewebs.com/RoyClarkMethod.
I have this magic ring. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, how? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong. And don't make us wait for too long. I
see you McGoggin' his meat, Kuhan.
I think it's got a goof tooth.
I think that Yancey Butler lives inside of every vagina. So Yancey Butler is a big club.
I think we all have little Yancey Butler in us.
Atticus Finch.
David Finch, he's a good man.
David Finch's art looks like Yancey Butler's mustache.